It's time for the 2-Minute Drill on the Bill Riley Show. A quick hit look at what's going on around the world of sports locally, regionally, and nationally. The 2-Minute Drill brought to you by Alta Mortgage Financial on Utah's number one sports talk, ESPN 700.
2-Minute Drill time, then we'll talk some Major League Baseball with Jay Jaffe just around the corner. 2-Minute Drill presented by our friends at Alta Mortgage Financial. We'll lead off the NFL drill by talking, or the 2-Minute Drill by talking some NFL football. Judy Batista covers the NFL for NFL.com. Columnist there. Hi, Judy. How are you?
Good, and you?
I'm doing terrific. I wanted to ask you about a couple of issues out west here. Number one, about 300 miles to the south of Salt Lake City, they're trying to bring the NFL to Las Vegas. What does your gut tell you about the Raiders in Las Vegas?
My gut tells me that it is not as much of a dead issue as it would have been 10 years ago or even 5 years ago. I think the owners are, you know, and they're the ones who ultimately make that decision, are much more open to Las Vegas as a potential site than they have been in the past. Arthur Blank, the owner of the Falcons, had something to say about it last week, in which he said his concern is not so much the gambling part, which was always the big concern about Las Vegas. It's more the demographics. Are there enough residents there in Las Vegas who would support the team? And that's a shift. I mean, there's no question that is a significant shift in thinking for the NFL. So I don't think Las Vegas is, in the past, it would have been a dead issue. It's not a dead issue anymore. I think it's a real possibility.
Do we see the biggest hurdle being the National Football League and the owners, or do we see the biggest issue still being the stadium in Las Vegas itself?
Well, I think, let's put it this way. I think if they come up, they meaning Las Vegas and the Raiders together, come up with a good proposal where they can get a stadium done. We all know the Raiders don't have as much money as some other franchises. They're not going to be able to solely fund the construction of a stadium by themselves. They will need some help. And I think if a combination of Las Vegas and, you know, perhaps the fans, people who seem to be involved in this, put up enough money that they can get a stadium built for the Raiders, and it's a good enough deal, I think the owners will seriously consider it. In the past, the owners of the league would never have even considered Las Vegas as a possibility. There was just that wall in their minds about you could not have a team in that close proximity to gambling. I think those concerns have been eased because, frankly, I think, you know, the way gambling is now, there's so many ways to do it. And, if you're worried about the corruption of a team, there are ways you could do that, and you don't have to be sitting side by side in the same town. So I think the biggest concern really would be, are there enough residents there who would support it? It would be a relatively small market in terms of population, one of the smallest markets in the NFL in terms of population. But, you know, the question is, would tourists who obviously flood into Las Vegas, would they support a team? I think that would then be the biggest consideration.
As long as we're talking about stadiums, LA's got one, and it's the stadium's on the way. The Rams are there. Ultimately, do you think there's another tenant in Los Angeles, or do you think it's just the Rams?
You know, when they first allowed the Rams to move, I was pretty certain the Chargers would eventually go there. But there's a real push on now to try to get a Chargers stadium settled in San Diego, to keep them in San Diego. Look, they want to stay in San Diego. I mean, that's certainly their first choice. I don't think anybody wants to be the second team in Los Angeles, especially because the Rams have already gone all out marketing the team. They've got months and months of a head start already, so I don't think the Chargers relish being the second team in there. The question, though, is even though there's all this momentum and enthusiasm in San Diego, what's the public appetite, again, for helping build a stadium? Would the Chargers build it on their own? My gut right now is that the Rams will be the only team in Los Angeles because I think there's some level of optimism that somehow something will work out in San Diego. But reality may intrude on that ultimately. And then the Chargers, people are going to have to decide if they're willing to be the second team in Los Angeles. And that's, frankly, not a very enviable position to be in.
Read her stuff at NFL.com. She's a senior columnist there. Thank you, Judy.
Thank you.
Judy Batista from NFL.com with us here on The Bill Riley Show. We move from the NFL to the NBA. We were just talking some NBA draft moments ago with Weber State's Joel Bolomboy. We're joined now by Ed Isaacson, who covers the draft in the NBA for NBA draftblog.com. And Ed, how are you?
All right, how are you doing?
I'm doing terrific. We had Joel Bolomboy on, the former Weber State Wildcat, whose stock is apparently rising very nicely right now. What are the NBA folks saying about Ballin Boy and where he might end up going?
Well, he was one of the few who made a distinct impression at the NBA Combine last week. Between his work in the drills, showing his athletic ability, being able to knock down shots, and bringing what he did at Weber State to the 5-on-5 games, just constantly working, hitting the boards, showing a little more versatility on offense than he probably did at Weber State. But, this is a very crowded draft once you get, to the mid-first round, into the second round, with a lot of similar players. There's a good chance we can see someone take a chance on Ballin Boy late in the first, if he works out well for teams. Or he can go all the way to the mid to late second, just based on what teams are looking for, if they want to have international guys. But I think a safe place to say for him is probably within the first 10 picks of the second round is a good spot for him to land.
Utah's Jakob Poeltl is widely considered to be a lottery guy, and it looks like a top 10 guy. Now that we've got the draft order and that top 10, top 12 pick set, do you anticipate Poeltl being a top 10 pick, and what's the most likely destination for you?
Yeah, I think, he's clearly the top, what you would consider a classic big man in this draft. And I think he's still going to come in the top 10. He can go anywhere from, somewhere in the, 6 to 10 range. I think if there's going to be a pick a most likely destination, Milwaukee, Greg Monroe didn't really fit with what Milwaukee was doing last year. And even though they still haven't signed, I think Poeltl will give them a lot more of what they're looking for, especially in the pick and roll game, plus his ability to defend the rim a bit better. So if I'm going to pick one spot, I'd say it's Milwaukee at 10 right now.
Ed Isaacson from NBADraftBlog.com. Check his stuff out over the next month as we ramp up to the draft. Thanks, Ed.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Ed Isaacson, we'll wrap it up with some more NBA stuff. Big news with a guy that had some local ties. He's going to New York. He was not a name that anybody kicked around, but he's now a guy that's the head coach of the New York Knickerbockers. Mark Berman joins us, Knicks insider, New York Post. Hey, Mark.
Hey, how are you?
Good. Jeff Hornacek, former Jazz man, guy that lived here in Salt Lake City for a good chunk of time, new head coach of the Knicks. You surprised by this?
Yeah, definitely shocked. Still trying to do a contract. But the shocking part has a complete lack of knowledge or history with the triangle. And 5 weeks ago, Phil Jackson told us that we will still run the triangle next season, and had a triangle seminar with many of the players after the season ended. And 5 weeks, things have changed. And Hornacek is under no mandate to run the triangle, and I don't think he will. I think he'll do the standard Phoenix offense that he ran, which is more Mike D'Antoni speedball attack. And I think fans here are very excited about that. But I'm shocked, and you wonder why the big turn in thinking.
Is this any kind of sign that Phil may be on the way out, or is Phil still pretty stable and in at that position where he is with the Knicks?
Yeah, well, definitely a sign that, in 1 year his contract has an opt-out, and, he's not as married now to this. If Hornacek is running the offense that so many other teams are running, I think there is less of a motivation for Phil to stick around for his entire 5-year contract. I think if Rambis was the call, I think he would have felt obligated to at least go 4 of the 5 years. But now I think he's got an out, and maybe that's part of his decision to take this route, that in 1 year, he can safely leave and not feel guilty.
Longtime Knicks insider Mark Berman with a little insight on the addition of Jeff Hornacek to the Knicks head coaching staff. Thank you. Thank you, Mark.
All right. Thanks a lot.
There you go. Mark Berman with us here, and that's your 2-Minute Drill presented by Alta Mortgage Financial.